The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
TheOldOrchard.com. On site for the game tonight. How you doing, Pierre McGuire?
I am excellent, sir. I'm trying to stay dry here. It is raining cats and dogs, has been for the last 2 days.
Oh, a late afternoon Florida downpour. There goes batting practice.
Well, no, we're in Washington, but yeah, we go to Florida tomorrow. We go to Florida tomorrow.
Well, there's still, there goes batting practice in Washington. How about that?
How about the Yankee fans that came down here for a bunch of days to watch the Nationals and the Yankees, and they got rained out, I think, every day.
So, do you have a do you vote on the Conn Smythe?
No, I have not been asked to vote on the Conn Smythe.
Okay, but let's pretend the season ended last night. I mean, is there any debate?
Marc-Andre Fleury.
So their coach gets the Jack Adams, the George McPhee nominated, three worthy candidates nominated. Yeah. We'll get to that in a second, but he's the GM of the year, right?
Yeah.
And their goaltender would win the Conn Smythe trophy, just as everybody predicted.
That would be pretty much correct. I'd say that's accurate, but you know what? It's an amazingly fluid year. Let's just say Winnipeg were to win the series. Let's just say they were. Mark Scheifele would have to be considered the odds-on favorite to win the Conn Smythe if they won the Cup. Let's just say Tampa were to win their series and come from behind. You've got maybe three or four different guys that you could say could win the Conn Smythe, including Victor Hedman, a defenseman. And then in Washington, do you go to Kuznetsov? Do you go to Holtby? Do you go to Carlson? Do you go to, Ovechkin? Who do you go to? So that's still far from being decided, I think. But right now, if you had to do it, Fleury would be the Conn Smythe Trophy winner right now.
Last Friday on this show, agent provocateur Alan Walsh.
He came into the season with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. I think he was really determined to show that he is a number one goalie in the NHL. There were people, hard to believe, but there were people doubting whether he was a number one goalie.
He's right. Right, Pierre? There were people.
I want to know who those people are. Because one of the things I love about Alan, he lays it out there. But I don't remember anybody from where, with the group that I run with or the group that I work with, ever questioning whether he was a number one. In fact, it was talked about ad nauseum that he was going to be the face of the Vegas franchise. And if you go back to the beginning of
you're moving ahead of yourself. Before he became the face of the Vegas franchise, were there not people around the NHL who doubted before he went to Vegas that he was
there may have been, but I don't know those people. They don't run in my circle, I'll tell you that. I watched him win right here in this building in a Game 7 last year against the Capitals. If he's not playing for Pittsburgh when Matt Murray was injured at the beginning of the playoffs, they might not have got out of the second round. So, nobody that in my circle of friends, including managers, coaches, scouts, and media people, I never heard one person say that he couldn't be a starter in the league. In fact, I'll go back to what I said at the beginning of the year. I thought they were a playoff team, and I thought they were going to cause a lot of problems. And one of the major reasons why is I thought they'd be in a lot of one-goal games, and he would win those games for them. That's what I said on your show.
But that's you.
He's not talking about you. No, but I'm telling you, and Alan knows I love him to death. I'm just telling you that I think part of this chip on the shoulder thing was internally created. See how you've been disrespected, which is good. It's not a bad thing. It's a motivational tool. You know, it's like when people tell me, well, Jonathan Marchessault had this chip on his shoulder. Jonathan Marchessault knows exactly how good a player he is. And he is a proud kid. He is a determined kid. That's what they're using. That is their rallying cry in Vegas, which is a good thing. But that's what nobody wanted you guys. You're the home for misfit hockey players. Nobody wanted you. That's what they're being told.
Well,
not a bad way to rally the troops, but they're far better than that.
Okay,
but
in many ways it's a fact. I mean, you're not protected and a team doesn't want you. Because on the depth chart or salary or a combination of both.
It's more complicated this time around because of the protection lists were far different than any other expansion draft we've ever had, number one. The rules were totally changed because Vegas paid $500 million to get in. So they needed to have a competitive team right away. That's number one. Number two, salary cap is the first time we've had the salary cap during expansion era.
So that played a major role in some of the guys that were available and not available. And the third thing is the way George McPhee manipulated the other teams and played one against another, which is what I've told you for years you have to do when you're trading high-quality components from your team. You have to create bidding wars. And if you don't, then you're not doing your job as a caretaker of your franchise. And he was able to do that brilliantly. So there's a lot of things that went into how their team was built. But I would say for most of those players, it was a different time because of the cap and because of the way George manipulated the draft rules in a very fair and very smart way.
You know, Pierre, one of the things I've been wondering about Marc-Andre Fleury, back in the playoffs when Pittsburgh wasn't winning Stanley Cups, it was so easy to point the finger at the goaltender because it's the easy thing to do. Marte Brodeur, back in the day, he was the type of goalie that could face 20 shots and be really effective. In my opinion, Marc-Andre Fleury, it looks like the more shots he faces, the better he is. And I'm wondering why that is.
You know who would be the best person to talk to about that? I thought about that the other day, by the way. That's a really good question, Mitch Gallo. You should ask you should get Curtis Joseph on and ask him. Because when Curtis Joseph was playing in St. Louis, Edmonton, and Toronto, and he was getting barraged with shots between 30 and 40 a night, which is about the average that they were in those days, and that was a different NHL because the red line was in, and most teams were averaging between 24 and 28 shots on net rather than what we see today with 33 or 35 shots on net. Totally different. He went to Detroit where they were giving up 19 to 22 a night, and he had a tough time playing there. He had a really tough time playing in Detroit. He'd be one of the perfect guys to ask that question to. I don't know. The one thing I do know about Marc-Andre is athleticism. He may be, I'm not saying he is, but I would be willing to debate on his side that he's the most athletic goalie in the league. I didn't say the best goalie. I said the most athletic goalie. I've seen him do some things athletically that are unbelievable in terms of vertical leap, side-to-side quickness, all things that you would do if you were testing a football player at the defensive back position or a point guard in the NBA before a draft. I've seen him do things that would equate to being able to do those things at a professional level in another sport.
I do spend a lot of time talking to the players because I have a lot of respect for them. I know what they're going through. I respect their personal agenda. I respect that sometimes they are selfish in what they're trying to accomplish, which is fine by me. But we have to do it together because at the end of the day, I need to be the coach and I need to make decision. And I want to make decision that will help the team but help you also. So I need your input. But at one point, you'll need to buy into what we're doing because then we're going to have a bit of an issue because I don't believe in coaching a group.
The new coach of the Laval Rocket, Joel Bouchard, who joined us an hour ago, and him and Dom Ducharme are back together again in the same organization. And I like the way he talks, Pierre.
I've done practices with him when he was coaching in Verdun, back before they moved to Blainville, Boisbriand. So I'm a big fan. I remember when Joel was playing in the Quebec Major Junior League. I was still coaching the NHL. I remember when he was playing down for Calgary's farm team down in St. John. And, you know, what's interesting about that, I almost became the coach there. When I was coaching in Ottawa, Doug Risborough flew me out to Calgary and asked me to think about taking over their farm team, and I eventually didn't do it. But I went and met Doug for a couple days out in Calgary and talked to him about that job. And Joel was a big part of that team at that point. He was a tremendous defenseman, an offensive-oriented, puck control kind of a defenseman who could really skate. He had outstanding two-step acceleration. So, I'm a big fan. I like him a lot. I think this was a good hire. You'll see that he's not going to mess around. They needed somebody that could develop players down there. It's not always about winning and losing. It's about players buying in, what he said in terms of cultivating a certain mindset. I think this is a big step towards getting back to trying. They haven't been able to do it for 6 years, but trying to do things the Montreal Canadian way. You have to develop a Canadian way, and I think this is a big step towards doing that. I really do.
What's the most important factor when you want to take a player and make sure that he's a ready-made professional in a plug-and-play situation from the AHL to the NHL?
How hard do you want to work? That's the first thing. You should never do this in front of the team, but every single guy has to meet in his office, and you have to go over goals and aspirations. And after you go over the goals and aspirations, you have to look the player right in the eye and say, how much are you prepared to give to achieve these goals and aspirations? And it can't be lip service. and you test them. If a guy says, I'm prepared to do whatever it takes, the next day you say, good, I'll meet you at the rink at 5:30. And if he shows up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you know you got a captive audience. If he shows up 20 minutes late, then you know you don't. So you test them right away, and you don't do it to every single guy at the same time, but you test guys, and you see. And, you know, one of the first things I'd implement if I was at the American League level is an everyday weigh-in. I'd implement that right away. Every single day that you come in there, you go in the trainer's office, and you get weighed in. And you see the fluctuation. You'll see if guys are working or if guys are playing. You'll find out right away. That's one of the first things I would do at that level, because it is a profession. They are getting paid. There are temptations. You are playing close to an unbelievable city. It's not like a lot of other American Hockey League places. So you've got to really look at these guys and check in on them all the time. But the number one thing you do is you bring them in and you eyeball them and you say, okay, goals and aspirations, please. How hard are you prepared to get there?
When I worked with John Demers on TV for 3 years, as a dear friend of mine, and he told me so many stories about him coaching, and to be honest, he helped me a lot too as a coach, because he was really validating a couple of things that I was thinking, and he did, and he did spend a lot of time with his player and was really close to his player.
More from Joel Bouchard a little bit later in the show if you missed our conversation from an hour ago. So as you know, Pierre, Paul Maurice is trying to become the first guy since Jacques Demers to win a cup. And for the first time in the postseason, Winnipeg's trailing in a series. How do you think they respond to that?
Oh, they'll respond well. Here's my biggest concern for them. Like Boston in the first round, who had to go to a seventh game against Toronto, they had to go to a seventh game in the second round against Nashville. They won their seventh game. And then they won game one of the next round, talking about Boston. Winnipeg did the same thing, did the very same thing. They go to a game seven and they win game one. And then the energy levels start to dissipate. You don't see them at as high a level in game two. You definitely didn't see them at as high a level in game three. Now we're talking about Winnipeg and Boston, the same thing. They're mirror images. And so my concern is the carnage factor kicking in. Josh Morrissey doesn't look like the same player as he was in round one. Jacob Trouba doesn't look like the same player as he was in round one and at the beginning of this series. They're not getting – Nick Ehlers is already hurt. They're not getting the same thrust from their depth players, especially the physical part of it, where they were unbelievably physical and dynamic in game one. They were a little bit like that in game two. They were not like that in game three. So there are a lot of issues that I'd be concerned about if I were a fan of the Winnipeg Jets because of that Game 7 they had to play. And the other team didn't. The other team didn't, and they never had to leave their time zone. And they didn't have arduous travel in the first round against L.A. They swept them, and they didn't have arduous travel against San Jose in the second round. So it's I would be wondering whether the carnage factor is starting to kick in for Winnipeg. They need more than just from Wheeler and Scheifele and Kyle Connor. They need more from a lot of guys.
Your game tonight in Washington?
You know, we haven't been match heavy. I mean, we've got a couple lines that play against them. But look at that line. Like Wilson is big, strong, heavy. Ovechkin, big, strong, heavy. You know, Kuznetsov's more the playmaker, puck possession guy. But they all have size. And that's the one thing, you know, Paquette's line has. They've got a little bit of weight to them as well. And so... do they play against them all the time? No, but do I try and get them out? You know, at times, there's no question because you just need some weight against those guys.
On matching up against the Ovechkin line.
he's a cutie pie because he hides a lot of stuff. He's good. He's very good with that. What he doesn't tell you is Victor Hedman and Dan Girardi play most of the shifts against Kuznetsov, Wilson, and Ovechkin. And Dan Girardi did it for a lot of years. Playing with the New York Rangers a lot of years. So he knows what Ovechkin does. It's a lot like, remember when the Canadiens beat Washington and the way Jaro Spacek played against Ovechkin?
Yep.
That's what they're getting from Girardi, the same kind of thing. But you didn't hear any of that stuff because he doesn't want to give up his game plan, which is fine. I totally understand. I respect that part of it from him. But Hedman the other night was a tower of power. Just dominant in every single aspect of the game. And if you watched them in practice this morning, super elite players. It's a really good team, as you know. He just stands out beyond belief. He's an asset that I don't think either team has. Carlson's good. Carlson's really good.
Yeah, he's not Hedman.
Orlov's been good, but none of those guys are Victor Hedman. Victor Hedman, 6'6", almost 230 pounds. He could be a tight end in the NFL.
Nobody
in the league has that guy. I'm telling you, he's a special breed.
Playing 25 minutes a night. He scored now in 8 straight games. And I know people were saying, well, he hasn't scored a goal, but he's he's been driving their offense.
Night. He got the game game winner the other night.
So based on the morning rushes, although, you know, we don't have news, maybe, you know, we'll be waiting for another hour or so in terms of Nick Backstrom and what might happen tonight.
Well, it's one of the things that's really got my goat. They don't practice here at the big rink. They practice out in Arlington, Virginia. So I have no idea. I couldn't even begin to tell you.
Okay.
Couldn't even begin to tell you. And I know the league monitors your show all the time. I behoove the league. Please make it for the playoffs a rule that every team, if they're going to skate, has to skate at the rink that they're playing in that night.
Well, wait until the gambling becomes legal all over the place, and then they'll have to, you know?
Well, that's a whole other discussion. We don't have enough time in the show to talk about it.
All right, well...
You know what it's going to do? I'll tell you what the gambling's going to do. I mean this sincerely. It's going to create so many jobs, not on the gambling side, on the investigation side. It's going to create a ton of jobs.
You mean security? NHL security?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so then
tons of jobs.
You'll be back telling stories about guys coaching with 6 police officers around them at the bench instead of just 2.
Pointing. No, I don't mean that. I mean, it'll all be undercover, but that in every sport, once it's going to be huge. I don't mean in hockey, in all the sports.
The players make too much.
That's going to be one of the major industries coming out of this.
Yeah, players make too much, Pierre. Come on. Their players are not going to.
We're not talking. Mitch,
yes.
We're talking about injury disclosure.
Oh, okay.
We're talking about trainers who make nothing.
That's true.
Injury disclosure is going to be the biggest thing that you're going to have to monitor.
Ah, you sound like an experienced gambler.
No, but I've been around the league a long time.
Well, here's an experienced gambler last night from Copenhagen.
I think he'd be a great fit for Montreal. I just don't know, how the trade fit would work and how much money Buffalo would have to take to make the transaction. Or conversely, Buffalo would have to throw something in for Montreal to take that much salary. He's a really good player. He's not swift of foot, but he's a really good hockey player.
Hey, Chris Cross, as Ekblad has a look. Down to McDavid, O'Reilly Park in front. McDavid walks in, they score! Tipped home by O'Reilly! Overtime winner! And Canada's off to the semifinals!
Gord Miller with us last night. Gord Miller on television earlier today from Copenhagen. If you're Mark Bergevin, if you're the Canadiens, and you've certainly got names circled, right, around the NHL, down the middle of the ice,
yep.
Would he be one of them?
Yep. But I will tell you this, I don't know if you'll have enough assets to do the deal. I know the people in Buffalo really well. I know the teams are talking to right now. That's a major 3-component deal. You're trading one, and you're giving up. Buffalo is trading one, and you're giving up 3. Whether it's picks, whether it's prospects, which Montreal doesn't have a lot of, whether it's established NHL players. But his name's got to be circled, but you have to weigh the pluses and minuses of not having elevated foot speed, and that's not going to improve for him. His hockey sense is dynamic and off the charts. His puck possession skills are phenomenal. His compete levels are really good. So I don't see any problems with any of those things. But as he gets older, and he's been in the league a long time, as he gets older, it becomes harder for guys that aren't super quick. And that's going to be the issue for them. But I can just tell you, Buffalo is doing major due diligence with a lot of players and with a lot of teams. They're going to be extremely active, and as they should be. Just like I think Carolina is going to be unbelievably active based on some of the calls I've been getting from different evaluators around the league. So you best do your homework if you're going to make deals for those kinds of players.
This morning with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Rick Moffitt.
And I've never heard this directly from John himself. So I'm going to caution this as being highly speculative, but I have heard from some that I trust that for a number of reasons, Montreal doesn't appear to be a fit for him.
All right, we've been trying to tell people for weeks, you know, to you know, it'd be great. It would be fantastic to have John Tavares here for 6 or 7 years, but, you know, you may want to direct your emotions somewhere else.
Yeah, it would be tremendous. We've talked about this for a long time. It would be tremendous. The reason why you got Carl Alzner last year, and I thought there was no way he was coming, is because you had the recruitment factor of Carey Price, Shea Weber, and Montreal overpaid in terms and dollars. That's how you got them. But now you're not in the position where you have the extra money. But John's going to want to come to a place where he's going to play with players that are going to help him win. And I, you know, one of his best friends is Steven Stamkos. And, you know, he saw what Steven's done, and look where Steven is now. So I think you have to be realistic in these things. Taxation matters come into play, too, with those kinds of contracts. You know, it's interesting. I'll just throw this out at people. There are players that have signed deals in Vegas, long-term deals in Vegas. If they had been in another marketplace, it would have cost them $15 million over the term of their deal in terms of taxation issues versus being in a no-tax state with a low cost of living like it is in Nevada. That's significant. That's not a, like a little bit of pocket change. That's significant. So that's one of the things you're battling against, and that's why I'll continually say it to you because I care about the market. Drafting and developing is gigantic for that market. Gigantic. And that's probably the only way you're going to be able to do it. You know, you can't. It's going to be hard to get free agents to go there in the prime of their career. It's going to be really hard.
Tampa Bay, Washington, in 90 minutes from now.